Well, as I thought about what I might share with you this morning, it occurred to me that in the last year, I've said very little about the family relationship. If I remember correctly, I preached a lesson right around Mother's Day pertaining to motherhood. I'm not sure that I've talked about the family in addition to that particular service. So I've decided this morning to talk with you about the responsibility that husbands have to love their wives. Now, next Sunday morning, if the Lord wills, I'm going to talk to the ladies about your responsibility to be submissive to your husbands. But this morning, I want to help you think about the responsibilities that husbands have to love their wives. And let me say at the outset of this study that I believe that this sermon will have value for anyone who might be contemplating marriage, for those who are newly married, for young men who are not married now, but at some time would like to marry. But I also think this sermon will have value to those who have been married for many years. And the first thing that I want to say about this particular subject is the most obvious thing of all, and that is, don't you like my PowerPoint? I just had to say that. The first thing I would say is that Jesus commands husbands to love their wives. In the passage that I read to you just a moment ago, the Apostle Paul talks about this fundamental responsibility. But if you noticed, I said, Jesus commands husbands to love their wives. And that's true. Because even though the Apostle Paul is the one who wrote these words, the command ultimately comes from Jesus. And I know that because of something that Paul told the Galatians in Galatians chapter 1, verses 11 and 12, when he wrote, "But I make known to you, brethren, the gospel which was preached by me is not according to man. For I neither received it from man, nor was I taught it, but it came through the revelation of Jesus Christ." So everything that the Apostle Paul taught, everything that he commanded on every subject, ultimately comes from the Lord himself. And in Ephesians chapter 5, three different times in that passage that I read in your hearing just a moment ago, three different times the Apostle Paul commands husbands to love their wives. He said in verse 25, "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her." And then in verse 28, he says, "So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself." And then near the end of this passage, in verse 33, Paul again writes, "Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband." In addition to this passage, Paul said something very similar when he wrote to the saints in the city of Colossae in Colossians chapter 3 and in verse 19. He said, "Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them. Now, I want to remind you that it is not just husbands who have the responsibility to love their wives. Wives have the same responsibility to love their husbands. And I know that because in Titus chapter 2, beginning in verse 3, Paul instructed Titus to instruct older women that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. And then in the fourth verse, he says that they, that's these older women, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children. So you see, this business of loving one another is a mutual responsibility. Husbands are to love their wives, and wives are to love their husbands. And if a wife doesn't love her husband, she's not doing what the Lord wants her to do. And if a husband does not love his wife, he is not doing what the Lord wants him to do as well. But as I've already said this morning, we're focusing our attention on the husband's responsibility to love his wife. Before I leave this point, I want to say that we must not allow Jesus' commandments on this topic to be watered down or weakened in our minds. I want you to notice that there are some things that Christ does not say in this passage. He does not say, husbands, love your wives at the beginning of your marriage. Now, I suppose in our society today, pretty much every husband loves, or at least thinks that he loves his wife when he marries her. That's pretty normal. That's pretty standard. It's not always the case in other societies. You see, in other societies, like India, for example, people are taught to love whoever it is that they marry. But in our society, we tend to marry someone that we already love. But I'm mentioning this because I think we all know that it's possible for husbands to stop loving their wives later on in the marriage. We see that happening in our society all the time. You may have friends or extended family members where that kind of a thing has happened. We read about that happening in ancient Israel in the time of Malachi, for example. He said in Malachi 2 and verse 14, "Yet you say, for what reason? Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously, yet she is your companion and your wife by covenant." There were Israelites in the days of Malachi who had stopped loving their wives. And God described that as a treacherous act. But although this is very fundamental and basic, I think it's important for me to mention that Christ did not say, love your wife in the beginning of your marriage. Christ said, love your wife. And that means all throughout your marriage. And then there's a second thing that Jesus did not say in this passage. He didn't say love her as long as she loves you. For Folks, just as husbands can stop loving their wives, and that happened in the days of Malachi, as I've already mentioned, well, it's possible for wives to stop loving their husbands as well. The Old Testament record tells us that Saul's daughter, Michal, loved David at the beginning of their marriage, but it also tells us that in time she stopped loving him. 1 Samuel 18 and verse 20 says, "Now Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David, and they told Saul, and the thing pleased him, and so they married." But later on, that changed. In 2 Samuel chapter 6 and in verse 16, the historian says, "Now as the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, Saul's daughter, looked through a window and saw King David leaping and whirling before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart." Now perhaps it would be helpful if we had the time to look at that context in more detail. Let me just say to you that it seems to me that Michal gets upset with David on this occasion because she doesn't think he's acting the way a king ought to act. And she's not happy about that, and she despises him. And so just as husbands can stop loving their wives, wives can stop loving their husbands. But Jesus doesn't tell husbands, "Well, you love your wife as long as she keeps on loving you." That's not what he says. And although it's certainly the case that an unloving wife might not be easy to live with, the same Bible that commands us to love our enemies commands us to love our wives. And so if a husband's wife becomes his enemy, what does the Lord tell him to do? Well, you love her anyway. I want you to notice that there's a third thing that Jesus doesn't say here. He doesn't say, "Love her if you're able to do that." Many people in our society today seem to have the idea that love is some kind of uncontrollable emotion that comes and goes. You fall into love and you fall out of love, and if you fall out of love, that's tragic, but you got to go on with your life. And I don't know if we have any classic country music fans in this assembly. I think we've got some rock and roll people. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm a classic country music fan. That's kind of what I listened to growing up, and that's what I like to listen to. I don't like this new modern stuff because I don't think it's country music, really. But I'm reminded of a song that Marty Robbins recorded some years ago. Some of you will remember that name. It was entitled, "Don't Worry." And the first verse of that song says, "Don't worry about me, it's all over now. Though I may be blue, I'll manage somehow. Love can't be explained, can't be controlled. One day it's warm, next day it's cold." I think Mark may remember that song. I think he told me his dad was a Marty Robbins fan. Marty Robbins is singing in that song, "Well, love's just something that comes and it goes, and if it goes, that's just too bad." But folks, that's not what the Bible teaches about love. And that idea has become a convenient excuse for sin in the family relationship. Some men try to excuse themselves by saying, well, I fell into love, and now I've fallen into love with somebody else, and I couldn't help it, and I couldn't control it. And they try to excuse themselves by saying, well, I just fell out of love. And they couldn't help that. It just happened. And so now they're going to leave their wife that they promised before God to love. Now, a big part of the problem with that kind of thinking is equating love with merely romantic infatuation. But when the Bible prescribes love for others, it demonstrates that love is an attitude that can be consciously created and maintained because it's an attitude that seeks the welfare and the best interests of the other person. This kind of love can be commanded. So it's not just an emotion. I'm not saying that there's no emotional element to biblical love. I'm not saying that. But it's much more than that. The kind of love that we're talking about this morning, the kind of love that husbands are to have for their wives, that wives are to have for their husbands, can be taught and it can be learned. Paul says in Titus 2 and verse 4 that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children. I can't remember if I've told this story or not, but if I have, you're going to hear it again. When I was in college, there was a young girl that my dad just thought would be the perfect girl for me. Daddy described her as being sweet-turned. That was his. And I said, Dad, she just doesn't ring my bell. And Daddy said, well, I think your clapper's broke. But folks, if that's the way we think about love as just merely some kind of romantic emotion, we need to change our thinking. So the first thing that I'm saying from Scripture to every husband in this assembly this morning is that Jesus commands you to love your wife, and that is a command that you can obey, and we must not water that down to mean something less than what God expects. But now the second thing that I want to emphasize is that Jesus not only commands us to love our wives, He teaches us how we're to do that. He teaches that we are to love our wives in a certain way. We're to love our wives the way He loves the church. Paul said, husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself for her. Now, there's two little words that are really, really important in that statement, and they are the two words, just as. He went on to talk about Jesus' love for the church in verse 26. He said of Jesus that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. Jesus' love for the church is a model, an example, a paradigm that he expects husbands to imitate and follow in loving their wives. And so what does Paul tell us about the way Jesus loved the church? He says he gave himself for her. It is a giving love. And he did that to sanctify her, to set the church apart, that she might be cleansed. Jesus' love for the church is a giving love, a sanctifying love, a cleansing love, a glorifying love. And that's the way Jesus expects you to love your wife, with a giving love. Jesus loved the church so much that he died for his bride. And husbands, you ought to be willing to do that for your wife as well, if need be. Your love for your wife should be a sanctifying love that sets her apart, like the ladies put their china in the china cabinet in the dining room. Your love for your wife should be a cleansing love and a glorifying love. You ought to make it easier for your wife to be a better person. You ought to make it easier for your wife to be a better Christian. Right? Some wives have to be Christians in spite of the influence of their husbands. Rather than making it easier to be a better Christian, some husbands make it harder. Some husbands make it more difficult. That's not what Jesus expects from you as a husband. And fellas, if you're not loving your wife in this way, you're not loving your wife the way Jesus expects you to love her. And then Jesus teaches us in this passage that husbands are to love their wives as they love their own bodies. Look at verse 28 and 29. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. We nourish and cherish our bodies. I think that's especially true of men. I've said before, when I get sick, I want lots of TLC. If our body is sick, we want to do whatever we can do to make it well. If we're in pain, we'll do anything that we can do to find relief from that pain. We take care of our bodies, and Jesus says that husbands are to love their wives in that way. And then Jesus also teaches that husbands are to love their wives as they love themselves. Look at verse 33. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Maybe if we go back to the very beginning, when God ordained marriage, think about that passage for a moment. That'll help us better understand what Paul teaches here. It was God who said in Genesis 2 verse 18 that it's not good for a man to be alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him. And the inspired record tells us that God caused a deep sleep to come upon Adam. He took one of his ribs, and from that rib, he fashioned a woman, and he brought her to Adam. And when Adam saw Eve, he said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." Someone has said, "Not from man's head was she taken, lest she be his ruler, nor from his feet, lest she become his drudge, but from man's side was she taken, that she might be his equal, from near his heart, that she might be loved by him, and from under his arm, that he might protect and preserve her." You may have referred or heard preachers refer to that statement in wedding ceremonies. And I really like that statement. It's beautifully worded, poetic, it seems. But may I say to you that it doesn't quite go far enough. It doesn't go as far as the Bible goes. Adam and Eve were actually made of the same flesh, and Jesus intends husbands and wives to think that way about each other. And while I believe that becoming one flesh involves the sexual relationship, I think it involves much more than that. I think it also involves an attitude whereby the husband sees his wife as being part of himself. Suppose someone were going to tie you to a stake and burn you to death like they did with some of the early Christians, like the Indians used to do in the Wild West, at least according to the movies. Would it matter to you which side of your body got burned? It's not going to matter, is it? Here's the point. God created Eve from Adam's side, so he would see her as a part of himself, as important to him as his own body. That's the way husbands are to love their wives. So Jesus not only commands husbands to love their wives, he teaches us how we're to do that. We're to love our wives as he loved the church, as we love our own physical body, as we love self. Well, let me say, I didn't keep up with my preaching. Or my slides. Jesus also teaches that this kind of love needs to be demonstrated. Husbands need to tell their wives that they love them, but they also need to demonstrate their love in their actions. So to illustrate the point, suppose a man claims to love his wife as himself, but he abandons her for another woman. Well, that would be ridiculous, wouldn't it? That would be absolutely absurd. Christ would never abandon his church. A person would never willingly cut his body in half. Suppose a man were to claim that he loves his wife as he loves himself, but he humiliates and degrades her on a regular basis, both privately and publicly. Have you ever seen marriages like that? I suspect you probably have. Where the husband is always running down his wife and making her feel inferior. Of course, there is the flip side to that coin. Sometimes wives will do that with respect to their husbands. The point is that the man who really loves his wife as he loves himself is not going to degrade her any more than he would humiliate himself, because her feelings will be as important to him as are his own. Suppose a husband claims to love his wife as he loves himself, but he spends money on himself while begrudging the money that she spends on herself. Suppose a man spends money on clothes for himself. That's not going to happen in our household. I wouldn't have any clothes at all if it weren't for Kathy. Well, you understand. I hate to shop, especially for clothes. But I've known some men who like to shop, and they like to dress up and wear nice clothes. Suppose a husband spends money on clothes for himself, but he begrudges his wife spending money on clothes for her. Suppose he's really big on spending money on his hobbies, golf, guns. Have I stepped on anybody's toes yet? I've seen some of Jeff's guns. He's got a cannon in his basement. But he resents it when his wife spends money on her interests. Suppose a man claims that he loves his wife as himself, but then he uses his leadership authority selfishly to get his way, to do what he wants. To selfishly dominate and manipulate his wife. I'm trying to help you see two very important things. The first is that the love that Christ commands husbands to have for their wives will cause them to treat their wives' feelings and welfare just like their own. What hurts her will hurt him because she's a part of him. And what she wants will be important to him because she's a part of him. And what brings her happiness will make him happy because her happiness is as important to him as his own happiness. Maybe this is the point the time when I need to say, since Kathy lives with me, that it's sometimes easier to preach this than it is to practice it. Second thing. Jesus' teaching about how much husbands should love their wives must be demonstrated not just claimed. John writes in 1 John 3, verse 18 and 19, "My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. And by this we know that we are of the truth and shall assure our hearts before Him." So I've said three pretty simple things about this responsibility this morning. Jesus commands husbands to love their wives. And He not only commands that, but He teaches us how we're to fulfill that command. And this kind of love must be demonstrated by our actions. And so the challenge facing every husband in this assembly this morning is for you to honestly ask yourself the question, do I really love my wife the way Jesus loves the church? And if the answer to that question is no, then I have a question for you. What are you going to do about that? What are you going to do about that? And as we think about any changes that we might need to make as husbands, remember a couple of things. We can do whatever God commands us to do. And if we won't do that, if we refuse to do that, then nothing else is going to make up for that. Not baptism, not church attendance, not giving liberally, nothing else that we can do is going to make up for our failure to love our wives as Jesus loves the church. James says in James 2, verse 10, "For whoever shall keep the whole law and yet stumble in one point, he is guilty of all." And so if your attitude hasn't been right and you haven't been loving your wife as Jesus commands you to, you can change that. You must change that. And the time for you to make up your mind to change is right now. We're going to stand and sing our invitation hymn. And if we can help anyone either establish a relationship with Christ or restore an impaired relationship with Him, we would be honored to help you in any way that we can. You can respond to the gospel right now as we stand and we sing.